now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2018. Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels, with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Eyes and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, with the Rebels in desperate need of a ship with heavy weaponry, Hera seeks out a master engineer who has built a powerful new starfighter prototype. There will be Mr. Grumpy Gills. Kallus is actually pretty evil in this one. And we get to witness a historic moment in Star Wars canon. We're talking about Wings of the Master this week. How you doing, Krius?
I'm going to wait till part two till I drop my name for Mr. Grumpy Gills.
Mr. Grumpy Gills. Oh.
I have a name for him, too.
I just kept thinking of Finding Nemo when Dory was like, who is a Mr. Grumpy Girls? How you doing, Chris? How was your week?
Not bad. A lot of yard work. Got a lot of yard work done in the last couple days. It's been awesome.
We're in a heat wave.
You are?
Oh, we've been breaking wet records all weekend long. It is...
You almost said breaking records.
I know. I can't talk tonight. Well, you know me. I've always had a little trouble saying R words sometimes. But yeah, like
Madeline Kahn in Blazing Saddles.
but we've been breaking records all week. Like our normal high is like 81, and it was like 97 yesterday.
We've just had perfect weather here.
Shut up.
mid-70s and sunny. I've been sculpting out my backyard.
I almost went walking in the park this morning, but then when I saw at 10 a.m. it was 88 degrees outside at 10 a.m., I was just like, hell no, I'm going to walk on the treadmill today. Fuck that.
You got to get, you know, big tunics like tattooing, you know, to protect you from the heat.
Or I could just walk on the treadmill in the air conditioning.
Is that too?
Well, my stepmom's training for the Peachtree Road Race. So she was like, yeah, I'm going to go running in the heat. And I'm like, it is 95 degrees outside. She's like, I know, bye. And I was like, you're going to outlive me. Stepmom, you're going to really outlive me today. I cannot speak today. I'm like, my R's are just like, bleh.
The sun's just baked all the R's out of you.
Yeah, really. It really has. But I had a pretty good week. Now that all my car drama is over with, like things are feeling like they're starting to get back to a new normal again. So I actually just finished beta reading the end of Megan's story for Valkyrie Strike. So I beta read the last like 5 chapters for her, and she's going to be working this summer to finish that up. So she's about to finish her little Thrawn project that Ooh. She's been working on since last year. So yeah, Valkyrie Strike's hopefully going to be coming to an end this summer. And I'm very excited for her because she wants to write now. Her next thing that Megan wants to write is a pirate Thrawn fanfic.
Thrawn as a pirate?
Well, he is a Commodore and a pirate Thrawn. Hunter. And, like, Vader and Kallus are going to be in it, and the Grand Inquisitor, and they're all, like, pirate hunters, and it sounds really interesting, and I'm very excited, but she wants to finish Valkyrie Strike before she starts that story, so I'm very, very excited for the next phase of her stories, so, yeah, I just need to get back to my writing.
Thrawn on the high space seas?
You know, I think she's setting it in our world, like Pirate Town, our world, so...
Oh.
Yeah, it's not going to be Star Wars. It's going to be a historical fan fiction. So I'm very excited to read it. I can't wait for her to get started, but she wants to finish Valkyrie Strike first. So
I think there's been some human genetic mutations, or maybe there was a tribe that was blue.
I remember you telling me about this.
So she could pawn him off as a whatever, a mutation.
If I remember correctly, she's going to do him from, because the whole thing about, you know, like I hope you guys enjoyed my panel at 221 BeatCon, because nobody even left comments on it. But we talked a little bit about that in the panel I did for 221 BeatCon, about how, like, he's kind of like the alien and the other, and, like, what makes him so different is the fact that, like, he's, like, the foreigner. And so the way we were, from my understanding, she's going to write him as being from, I think, India. And so over here in the Caribbean, working for the British company, like everybody else he's working with is British people, and he is going to be from India. I think that's her idea that she was bouncing off me. She might change it because she's still probably a couple months out from writing it. But either way, like, I'm like, I don't care. This sounds awesome. I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to beta read all of this. I'm very excited for it.
Excellent.
I hope everyone liked my panel at 221 BeatCon. I worked really hard. Did you like it, Chris?
I did.
That was a long pause you took.
The what?
That was a long pause you took. No, I was just laughing. I was laughing the other day. So it's so funny. Like, the things that I, like, work, like, super duper really hard on, like, get no comments, but, like, we'll shit post something.
Always how it goes.
I know. Like, we'll shit post something and get, like, all the comments. And I'm like, but I worked, like, for weeks on this. But that's life. You don't get recognition for what you do. So, but you get recognition for shit posts. So, did you like this week's episode?
I did.
I don't think there's a single time I've asked you where you were like, no, I hated it. You've had a couple that you've been like, it was all right, but you haven't had a single one.
No, there's been some days in the void, you know, and there's been some grievous intrigues.
Let me phrase that. I think so far in Rebels.
Oh, in Rebels, there hasn't really been one that I've been just like, bah, so far.
Yeah, there's a couple that you were like, yeah, it was all right. But, like, there hasn't been a single episode where, like, nah, man, this was bad.
Yeah, no, I mean, Filoni and crew are amazingly consistent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They would have to work really hard to get a show that's, like, a 5. I'd have to start, like, maybe, like, grading on a curve or something to start getting, like, any kind of, like, really low scores, I think, in these cartoons.
Yeah.
Sorry, spoilers, everybody.
But, by the way, did you hear those two really loud explosions?
No. Why, okay. You got explosions going on around there?
It's Memorial Day. The neighborhood next door to us is doing, like, fireworks. So, if you happen to hear, just to date this episode, we're recording on Memorial Day.
I heard that one.
Yeah, so they're setting up fireworks in the neighborhood, like, on the other side of the trees, so heads up, I'm not dying or in a war zone.
I always thought the 4th of July as being more fireworks than Memorial Day, you know?
I know, like, I was actually, like, my dad has an issue with that. He's like, we shouldn't be, like, setting off fireworks, and this is a day of remembrance.
It's a day of somber remembrance. And you know, stoically staring out into the distance, it's not a fireworks day. And I mean, even veterans, I wouldn't say Veterans Day would be a bad time for fireworks, too, because then you have live veterans who probably have PTSD and setting off fireworks. So it's like 4th of July, you know?
Yeah. New Year's Eve. But then the neighborhood on the other side of the trees from our house, like, they will set off fireworks.
Whatever excuse.
Like, it's like Valentine's Day and they're setting off fucking fireworks.
Like, Valentine's Day even makes more sense. It's exciting. Sparks are flying.
We're in love. So I apologize now for the giant explosions in the background.
No, they will accent the show.
Oh, man. I hope they explode while I'm doing my, like, when I'm reading the Act 1 and then I'm talking about the battle and have the battle sounds in the background.
We can only hope.
Woo, crush fingers. Well, I like this episode too. You know, like, I remember the first time I watched this episode, I found it all right, but, like, it was because I didn't know, like, the greater content of, like, the Rebel story. So, like, I do remember, like, the first time I watched it, I was like, that was an all right episode. It was good. But, like, now, like, knowing, like, the story of Rebels and stuff, like, this episode is like, yeah, this is a good one. I think I purposely still scored it low, though, because I think I've given everything and eights.
Yeah, that's the problem with, and I was just thinking that, that's the problem with, like, knowing the whole context of everything is it adds stuff
so
to
much.
It. So I've been sort of trying to take, I've been sort of taking that stuff off to keep it, everything from being, like, an 8.75 to 10, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's one of the things I think that makes the rewatch a lot better, though, and, like, makes the episodes better for me. Because it's kind of like that, it's like that episode where we first met, like, saw Guerrera and his sister Steela, and, like,
right.
The episode with Steela's death. Like, that would be just a normal run-of-the-mill Clone Wars episode if it wasn't for all the content that came after it. And I think that's what, you know, that's what's happening now with Rebels. Like, this is all cool, and this is a big Hera episode, and they're about to drop a trilogy of books called Alphabet Squadron, where she's a general, and she's in charge of the Alphabet Squadron, and it's like, we know that she's in Rogue One, like, where she's General Syndulla. So, like, you know, it's not like this doesn't, it, like, that kind of stuff, like, comes back to this. And it's very interesting, like, kind of revisiting this, because I think, well, that was kind of the point. Like, you know, we wanted to revisit the show from the point of view of people who have seen the entire show.
We had no choice, really.
Yeah, and we wanted to, so.
Without some sort of hypnotherapy to make us forget the first time we watched it. Which I don't know if that's even possible. Probably would need some sort of, like, lobotomy.
Yeah. Or a Jedi mind trick.
Yeah.
Well, you're ready?
Or lobotomy. Yeah.
Let's do this. Wings of the Master is the 22nd episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on November 11, 2015. It was written by Stephen Melching and directed by Sergio Pais. I remember that from John and Marie and Ma being on here. Pais and Dave Filoni. Some extra information for you. Quarry is voiced by Corey Burton. Burton was the voice actor for Count Dooku, Cad Bane, and Zero the Hutt during the Clone Wars. Quarry's name is derived from the name of concept artist Ralph McQuarrie. The character also appears in the second season of LEGO Star Wars Freemaker Adventures, where Burton reprised the role. Quarry's astromech droid, BG-81, is named for ILM veteran Bill George, who designed the B-Wing fighter for Return of the Jedi. BG's color scheme matches an old photo of Bill George wearing a striped blue t-shirt. You can actually see that photo on StarWars.com under this episode. The notion that Mon Calamari was pivotal to the design of the B-Wings date back to an old role-playing game called Strike Force Shantipole, published in 1989 by West End Games. It is also the source of the planet and project name Shantipole. The Phantom now will get a remodel in this episode. The Phantom has an astromech socket that allows them to program and travel in hyperspace, but there must be a droid in place to use the hyperdrive. Rebels Recon for this episode spent some time talking about Hera's love of flying. It goes beyond combat piloting and more of a love in general, and that's how she expresses herself. Vanessa Marshall, who is Hera's voice actor, talked about how her father had a love of flying. He had his own open cockpit biplane, and Marshall said that she would go barnstorming with her dad on flights. I had to Google what barnstorming was. I didn't know what it was. So, it's really cool, though.
And finally, my God, I'm old. I used to play a video game on the Atari 2600 called Barnstormer, where you'd go barnstorming.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah.
You would drive your plane through a barn.
Oh, that's so cool. But yeah, Vanessa Marshall's dad used to do that and stuff like that. So, and finally, they go on to talk about the B-Wing's introduction in this episode. Pablo Hidalgo and Dave Filoni discussed the allure to use this ship because it was so underserved in the original trilogy on screen. They talk about the X and Y-Wing pilots that we see in A New Hope are part of General Dodonna's group, where Luke is. But the groups with the B-Wings and the A-Wings are part of another group that we haven't really seen on screen before. So this allowed them to play more with the B-Wings.
Somebody's been playing with B-Wing.
Actually, Yoda, I have an announcement to make with you.
Oh.
Actually, more of a request. So, listeners, we are starting to run low on questions for Yoda. So please, send in your questions for Yoda, or Yoda's going to be really sad.
Why do you not want to ask Yoda questions?
Especially life questions.
Yoda likes answering questions. Makes Yoda feel useful.
I know, and we honestly haven't had much use for Yoda since we stopped Clone Wars. I'm kidding, Yoda. I'm kidding. I love you.
Pardon me. That's how Yoda burps. Yoda is fine.
But yeah, guys, we are starting to run a little bit low on listener questions, so remember you can email me at... What's my email? You can leave us voicemail... comments on these episodes at 2TrueFreaks.com. We did have somebody reach out to us, and they wanted to leave a comment on an older episode. Just know that if you are commenting on an older episode, let me know if there's a Yoda question there, because I don't check the older episodes for Yoda questions. So if you are leaving a comment and it's on an older episode that we've already covered in the feedback, just shoot me a message on Facebook so I know that there's a Yoda question there, because I don't normally check for those. So, but yeah. How you doing, Yoda?
Not bad. Hot in the swamp it is today.
And that's actually the question that I'm asking for you. So this question comes from me, because like I was saying at the beginning of the show, we are going through a heat wave in late May. So my question for you is, I have been dying in the heat. How do you stay cool in the summer in the middle of a hot swamp? Because I'm having trouble.
Yoda goes sky clad.
Goes what?
Sky clad.
I don't know what sky clad is.
Clad only in the sky and the sunshine.
So you go jumping in the air with nothing? Is that what you're saying?
Yoda in his birthday suit.
You know, I had that thought when I was much younger, that the only time that you're not technically touching anything solid is if you go skydiving with nothing on, no parachute or anything, and then you get a sensation of not touching anything until you die. But
Sometimes Yoda applies moist peat moss. Keep him moist and cool. Leeches the heat away from Yoda, it does.
Do you go to your Yoda spa and, like, take little mud baths?
Yeah, spa. Backyard. Whole planet is spa. Tiny creatures clean Yoda.
Well, do that guy guess keep you warm?
Circle of nature it is. The way of the force it is. Tickles it does.
I guess taking a mud bath would help you cool down, because, like, you know, like hippopotamuses and pigs do it and stuff. They take mud baths.
Call Yoda a hippopotamus and pig, do you?
No. I said you like them.
Says Yoda wallows.
Do you wallow?
Splashes around, Yoda does.
Jumping in all the puddles.
Never, a Jedi never wallows. You know who wallows?
Yaddle.
Yaddle.
I almost asked you a Yaddle question this week.
Yaddle.
Oh, I bet she has a lovely spa that you can go and get mud baths in. And probably has like a cute little like face to tan. I guess I should go to Yaddle's spa.
Yeah, you should go to Yaddle's spa.
Oh,
see
Yoda.
If Yoda cares.
Oh, Yoda, I won't abandon you. I know. I will stay with you because you're my friend and I love you.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for giving me those tips, because it really has been hot here in Georgia. Yeah. It's been dying.
Naked and peat moss. Yoda's hints.
I'll keep that in mind. I'll check for the bugs before I put the moss on me. Well, thank you, Yoda. I will talk to you next week. And remember, guys, send in your questions.
Yeah, please. We don't want to... We need some sort of structure to engage him in, or else if it gets too freeform, it gets really bad, guys.
We need life advice questions. Let Yoda give you that life advice. Even if you have to bullshit, it'd be like, hi, I have a friend who is, I don't know, like...
Some of you have got to have some sort of marital problems or job problems or something. Yoda will straighten that shit out.
Or even just make up a friend with a life of crime or something.
Yeah, a friend. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be like
all
your
the
actual
questions
life.
Are for a friend.
Feel free to make up questions. Because Lord knows that we bullshit, so you guys can bullshit too. So. All right.
Yeah, it's a good thing you cleared up that this is not totally serious, Hope.
Oh yeah, the not.
I hope they understand that. Yeah.
After
guys,
what?
Grip on reality, guys.
After 173 episodes, this is not serious. Yeah. All right. Well, you ready?
Sure am.
Act one. We open with the Ghost Crew and their rebel friends heading for some planet to make a McDonald's run for the starving people. It seems like it's going to be an easy mission, one that they've made before. Which is why the Empire's there with a blockade around the planet. And it's Alexander Kallus who has to tell the rebels to leave. And Zeb's like, oh great, it's my future boyfriend here and he's ready to fuck up all day again. And a fight breaks out between Phoenix Leader and... breaks out with Phoenix Leader and his little A-Wings as they move out to protect the ghost. And they have to protect the transport with all the McDonald's on it, because those people are hungry. And Hera is calling out points for her team to shoot down, and they're taking out TIE fighters left and right. But the problem is that the food transport isn't as fast or strong as the other ships. And Kallus focuses all his fire, and the McDonald's transport is destroyed. They're not loving it.
Sorry.
They're not loving it. The entire mission is a failure, and Hera looks crushed. Phoenix Leader is killed, so Hera has to give the call to abort the mission. And they all jump out of there to hyperspace. Sorry, I'm laughing at my McDonald's joke. I just thought of and slid in there. Later, Kanan, Hera, and Commander Sato and Grunkle Rex are determined to finish this mission, or the people will starve. And they don't have a ship strong enough to beat the blockade. And Grunkle Rex is like, well, I know a guy who has made a ship that's specifically designed for blockade busting. But he's a bit of a recluse and lives on a planet called Shantipole. And this planet is super dangerous and will totally kill any pilot who tries to land there. And Kanan's like, well, since everyone else here sucks, I volunteer my space wife because she's the best pilot in the galaxy. But Hera wants to do the next blockade run, but Kanan insists that Hera should go. And Commander Sato gives his okay. So the ghost arrives at the planet Shantipole. Space Mom is not as happy that Space Dad volunteered her for this mission. Even if there is a magical ship that can do everything they needed to do, Hera can't guarantee she'll make it back in time for the next mission. And Kanan's like, well, you better hurry up and leave then. So Hera, Sabine, and Zeb hop onto the Phantom minivan and mosey down to the planet. Kanan, Ezra, and Chopper are left behind to man the ghost and get ready for the next blockade run. Down on Shantipole, Hera and the space kids see why going to this planet is such a one-way trip and tricky. The upper atmosphere is filled with lightning that makes ships lose power when they're struck. And Zeb and Sabine are like, what the fuck, Mom? Warn us next time so we don't come! Well, the Phantom minivan is getting hit up left and right by lightning strikes, and they finally break through the clouds, but with very little power left on it. And there's rock spires jutting up from the ground, and Hera is trying her damnedest not to hit any of them. And Zeb and Sabine are freaking out in the backseat. Hera spots the landing field and crashes onto the platform. They slide just to the very edge of the field. Throwing their weight to the back of the Phantom, they get jolted as something suddenly grabs the ship. Jostled out, they meet a Mon Calamari man named Corey, who has latched onto the Phantom to keep it from falling. And he is not very happy to see them at all. What'd you think of Act 1?
I liked it. You know, I never get sick of the way hyperspace looks when you're on a ship and it's in hyperspace. I just always love that effect. That yeah. just sort of blue blur all around it. Okay, so those Imperial ships, they were looking very Clone Wars. They're all like rounded off and Clone Wars-y looking.
Yeah, they. I don't know what kind of ships they were. They look like kind of like light cruisers. I guess I should have looked that up, but because they're not full Star Destroyers, they look more like light cruisers.
They're like mini, and my other note is, Kanan and Hera know how to fight. You know, they fight very well. They argue very well. You know, they don't they don't get personal about it. So it's this interest. It's usually people don't fight well in half hour shows. But I thought Kanan was kind of a jerk for volunteering her. But then when I thought about it, it's like Kanan knows it like a Jedi test when he sees one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he's sending her because he knows she's like the hottest pilot in the galaxy. And that if anybody's going to win over that this guy's on this weird planet like that way, so that only the most, you know, dedicated pilot's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows, you know, because I'm like, why didn't Kanan's always like volunteering for stuff, but it was Hera who had to do the job. And he probably figured it would come out to her advantage in the end.
Yeah, I actually had a very similar note to that. So I'm going to go ahead and it's actually
yeah,
my...
that's all I got for part one anyway.
Because that's my big note of this act. I actually, because I had that thought for like half a second about him volunteering her and being kind of jerky. But like the more I thought about it, I really like him doing that. Because here's the thing about Hera. She really runs in hard and like fast, hard facts and truths and evidence and stuff like that. And she also prioritizes missions with those facts and evidence. So it makes sense to Hera to lead the blockade because she knows how many ships they physically have at that time. And she's running those numbers and she's like, I think we can do this and stuff like that. So like she's like her entire logic system is based on like what they actually physically have. But Kanan as a Jedi, he has a bigger sense and knows that in a way that that's not where Hera needs to be. He doesn't know exactly why, but like he understands that that's not where Hera needs to be. And it's much easier for Kanan to not believe in hard facts and truths because he understands that there's a bigger, he's more used to making those like leaps of faith than Hera is. Hera is more like, we tangibly have these ships now. And Kanan's the one that's going, that's more of the leap of faith person because he has the Force to like guide him in that.
Right, right.
And also says a lot about their relationship too, because Kanan trusts that Hera will make it back in time. And Hera has to put aside her practicality to trust Kanan's faith in something. And that says something a lot that they trust each other in that way, that she has to trust his leap of faith and he has to trust that she's good enough to make it back in time.
Yeah, even though she's not really happy about it.
Yeah. So it really, I like that fight too, because I mean, he is probably the only person that can make her go. Like, I don't think anybody else could have made her go except for Kanan. And that just shows how much that she trusts him. My next note is, I like how this opening act, even though I was very sleepy when I wrote this today, I did not sleep well after I finished this note. I took like a 3-hour nap today, so I feel great now, but now that I'm reading this, I was like, what the fuck did I write when I was half awake? Because I did not sleep well last night. I like how in this opening act that even though she's not Phoenix, the leader of Phoenix Squadron yet, it's clear that the other A-Wing pilots really respect Hera and call her captain. And even when Phoenix leader is killed, she's the one that takes over and starts making commands for everybody, even though that's not her rank in command. It's just people automatically respect Hera and recognize that she's good at her job.
Because they're pilots.
Mm-hmm. Kallus is extra evil in this episode by destroying food for starving people.
And gloating over it. He's like even doing little like,
And I wrote this next note before seeing Act 2, but I wanted to bring it up anyway because in Act 2 I come back to this. So I was trying to defend Kallus on this one because the reason I was trying to defend him is because I know that later in the season we're going to have honorable ones, which is Kallus's beginning to turn to the rebels. But so far, like in the show, we haven't really had a chance to have any chance to redeem Kallus because he helped kill Tua. He was gloating about killing Lasat. He kicked a guy off a bridge in the very first episode, and now he's destroying food for starving people. And I've been looking for, like, places where it's like, well, maybe, what I wrote is like, well, maybe Kallus hasn't been on the planet, and he doesn't know the full mission, and he's just assigned to this because his rebels are there. But then I got to Act 2, and he fully knows that the planet is starving and is helping with that, so I'm like, I can't defend Kallus on this one.
Yeah, you're not on the favorable side of the Kallus arc yet, so
it's kind of hard. I've just been, the only one that I can really see time that, because I remember you brought that up very early with us doing Rebels, which is like, Kallus has done shitty things, and he might not actually really earn his redemption arc. And but I love Kallus. Like, I love the character. And so I've been looking for those, like, little hints of it. And the only time I can actually really see him having a problem with stuff the Empire is doing is when Grande beheaded Oresco and Grint. Like, that was the first time that we ever seen him have, like, a sharp problem with anything in the Empire.
And that might have been just because I needed those guys, you know? I was using those guys.
and I still go back to the fact that
I don't think it was like he felt sorry for him. I think it was more like he felt Grande was, you know, overstepping his authority, and those were his guys, you know? So he was more like being intruded upon than like, oh, what a waste of human life.
See, I took it as Oresco and Grint, even though they had been failures, they were loyal to the Empire, and they were punished even though they were loyal to the Empire. And that's where I think he had the problem with it. Like, unlike Tua, who was leaving, like, she was defecting, so he was fine because she was then the enemy. But Oresco and Grint, yeah, they failed, but they were still very loyal men, and I think he had a problem with loyal men being executed for their cause that they were loyal to.
Right, but he's not going to lose, you know, it wasn't a humanitarian impulse, you know what I mean? It was just purely like a matter of principle for him.
Yeah.
Then they're poor widows.
But yeah, like, that was, I've been looking for places to defend Kallus, and I'm not
good luck.
I'm not getting very far.
You'll get some bones thrown to you soon enough.
I know. And my only other note is I really love the entire sequence of them landing on Shantipole, like them coming through the clouds, like that really like painted beautiful shot of like them coming through the clouds. And then when they get down there, like Harris piloting is awesome. But I also love like Zeb and Sabine like freaking out in the backseat and like panicking, because you don't often see Zeb or Sabine panic and freak out, and they are panicking. And that's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and there's some very classic Star Wars scenes in there where they fly by, like, other ships that are impacted into the mesas all around, you know, and the outcroppings, and you just barely see them, you know, and you react right along with Zeb when he's like, wait, that was a spaceship.
I love that line. I was like, was that a ship? Don't think about it. That was a ship! But like, I love that entire sequence. It's just, it really showcases why Hera's awesome. And I love when they're upside down. Her little Leku are upside down too. And I love it. But that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, that's all I got.
All right. Act 2.
The Act 2 in which Chris will name Grumpy.
Mr. Grumpy Gills.
Yeah.
I can't wait. So. At first, Quarry is all like, get off my lawn. But when they mention Rex, he's a lot more open to them being there. Hera says that this planet is pretty terrible for ships in general, but Quarry is like, if you can fly here, you can fly anywhere. And he invites them all inside to see his ship. Quarry makes a big deal of showing them a ship that he calls the Blade Wing, aka the future B-Wing. Sabine and Zeb are shitting on the ship, saying that it's weird and it's ugly and it's gross. But Hera is practically hugging the thing, going, it's beautiful! I love it! I can't wait to fly this thing! The fleet is gonna be so happy! And Corey's like, excuse me? I never said you could have my ship! And he walks out. So Zeb, Hera, and Sabine are making repairs to the Phantom and discussing what to do about Quarry and the Blade Wing. I can't say W's today either. Blade Wing. And they discover some bad news, that they don't have the parts or the comm system to get help from Kanan and the Ghost. So they're stuck there. or they would be stuck there, but Quarry gives them parts to help them make repairs and loans them his astromech to help out. Hera tries again to convince Quarry to let her fly his ship, but he's still being a grumpy gills over it, and he says that he'll wait for the right pilot to come along. Meanwhile, with the Empire, Kallus chats with a dude on the planet that he's blockading, and they're purposely starving these people, so they have no choice but to bend to the Empire. And Kallus knows that the good guys will come back to try and help these people. All he has to do is wait. Back with Hera and the kids, Space Mom tries again to convince Quarry to let her use the Blade Wing as they work on fixing the minivan. He wasn't going to just transmit his plans to just any old pilot. It has to be the best pilot. So, Hera tells him about her being a little girl on Ryloth during the Clone Wars, and she would peek up at the Republic ships and dream of flying. She didn't leave Ryloth to fight. Hera left Ryloth because she wanted to fly no matter what. She says that she learned to use her abilities to help people and help others, and when things are exploding around her, she is at her best when she's flying. And that little speech is enough to give Quarry a change of heart. He agrees to let Hera pilot his ship. While we touch briefly with Ezra and Kanan, they're loading up the Ghost with supplies to make the blockade run, and Ezra's like, Space Dad? You're going to fly the Ghost and we're doing this? I have some concerns. And Kanan's like, well, I have some concerns too, son, but we have to ramp up the dramatic tension of the episode for a great climax at the end, so let's go nearly die for plot reasons. Woo! And back at Quarry's place, Hera's in the Blade Wing, getting ready to take it out for a test flight. And as she's booting up the ship, Zeb and Sabine ask Quarry how it flew before. And Quarry reveals that it theoretically flies, and it's theoretically a plane, but he's never actually flown it before. And Zeb and Sabine are like, what? Space Mom, no! And Hera gives a thumbs up back at them and flies off in the Blade Wing. And a false. And the children panic that their Space Mom is now dead. But vroom! The Blade Wing flies up from the clouds below and takes to the sky. And Captain Hera, Space Mom, future General Syndulla, flies the fuck out of that ship. And it's an awesome sequence. And she tests the weapons and has a mini Death Star-like beam that can destroy things. And she's shooting this shit. And it's great. And once she's satisfied, Hera comes back to the hangar and lands. And she hops out, and that she says the ship is wonderful. And then she gets a bunch of constructive criticism, because of course she does, because she's Hera Syndulla. What'd you think of Act 2?
It was fun. I wonder, though, why... The only thing I wonder about the B-Wing that's super cool about it is I don't think in any of the, like, in Return of the Jedi when it showed up, that we ever saw it use that awesome mini Death Star beam.
You know, though, this is a prototype. This is a prototype ship, and they did say later in the episode that whenever you use the Death Star beam, it drains the power from the hyperdrive.
Right.
So it might be something that they took off so they would have a hyperdrive.
Well, also, now that I'm thinking about it, when the B-Wings were being used in Jedi, they had to come in via hyperdrive. They all came in via hyperdrive, so they maybe couldn't have used it. Because it's probably like either use hyperdrive or use that weapon. So,
yeah.
Okay, so that sort of explains that. And they have proton torpedoes, which is almost close to photon torpedoes.
Yeah.
Not scientifically, but just phonetically. And I only have three notes, and this is note number two. Another very just awesomely Star Wars thing is opening up a scene by just a random goofy flying creature landing and then panning down to our characters. It's just a great scene setter. And I love those big floppy nosed flying things. We're totally awesome. All right, so you guys ready for his name?
Yes.
His name is Droopy Calamari.
Your best, but it's okay.
Well, this might be something where I'm too old, but are you familiar with Droopy Dog?
I know Snoopy.
Droopy Dog's that he sort of talks like Droopy Calamari does. Droopy. Oh dear.
Oh, him! Yes, droopy. I had to Google that shit, but yes.
I guess I thought it was better than it was.
No,
well,
I
he's
get it
droopy
now.
Calamari to me.
No.
Plus,
I get
I've been
it
watching
now.
Kitchen Nightmare. I've been not episodes, but just clips from Kitchen Nightmare. So I just see Gordon Ramsay going, "This is some droopy calamari." Droopy calamari.
Droopy calamari. Is that all your notes for Act 2?
That's all I got. That's all you're getting out of me for this part.
I'm going to get my only really shallow note out of the way. This act killed me trying to defend Kallus because he's like, yes, starve the people more. And I was like, I can't defend you, Kallus. I tried.
Yeah, no, he was sneering a lot in this part for sure.
He's so cute, though. He's such a cutie. I love Kallus and his little freckles and beard and his mutton chops. Agent Mutton Chops. Kallus Phallus. I did not come up with a joke. I'm stealing it from somebody. It was a funny joke where it was Ezra going, so now that he's joined the rebels, we can't call him Kallus Phallus anymore. And like Sabine like slaps her hand over his mouth, and Kallus comes over and he's like, did you guys call me?
What do you call him when you throw him out of the ship?
I don't know.
Kallus Ballast.
What do you call his drinking cup? A Kallus Chalice.
Oh.
Anyway, so my first of the big notes that I have, you know, I kind of sort of understand where Corey is coming from, being so protective of his ship, because the way he's coming off and the way he's talking about it, it seems that people just want him for his stuff. You know, like they just want to use his ship for his for their causes without actually appreciating his work and his craft. And, like, because the way he talks about, like, oh, the rebellion and stuff like that, it sounds like people just want to use his stuff without appreciating it. And I think that's what makes Hera so different, because she's coming from a place of, she just fucking loves to fly. Like, she loves to fly, and the fact that she's fighting in a war is just a byproduct of that, because she has to. But she actually loves to fly. And, it, like, that's definitely, like, a big deal to him. But I totally understand where he's coming from, just being super protective of his work.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why he's where he is, too, is he's kind of he gatekeepers himself, you know?
Yeah. I do love the reveal of, like, I've never flown it. And the kids are like, what? What do you mean you've never flown it? He's like, it should fly, I hope. I actually really love that scene a lot. My next note is, I really like Hera's speech about flying the second time through. Because I remember the first time I watched this, the speech came off really stilted the very first time I watched it. And I was like, yeah, that was okay. Like, it's very, like, telling, not showing kind of writing. And I remember that from the first time I watched that. But the second time through, now that I'm watching it, I remember, like, all the previous episodes. Because they don't have to show, not tell. They can tell, not show, because we have an entire season and a half watching Hera kick ass and take names flying. And we've seen it all throughout the series. And so it's also a really nice speech, too, because it gives us more of her background on Ryloth and also why she's more willing to trust Rex, because he was a clone and he helped liberate it. And also just Vanessa Marshall's really good in that speech. Like, she really puts a lot of feeling and emotion.
She sells it, yeah.
And I think, you know, they were talking in Rebels Recon that her father had a love of flying, and you can almost kind of feel that she was drawing from that for Hera in this episode. But yeah, I do remember the first time I watched the speech, I was like, it's okay, it's kind of stilted. But kind of watching it a second time now, I'm like, no, this is a really well-done speech. And, you know, Hera's saying certain things specifically to kind of get Corey on her side, but you can also feel that there is a love there behind it, well, even though she has motive behind it.
And he's aware that she is trying to sell him onto his side, but, you know, she sells it, you know. He determines that, oh, okay, you know, somebody isn't going to be able to word it this way without really knowing what it feels like.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed that speech a lot more the second time around. So I kept thinking about something, though, this entire episode, mostly whenever Kanan was flying the Ghost. It's been several months since I've listened to the audiobook A New Dawn, which is the book where Hera and Kanan met. And correct me if I'm wrong, because, like I said, it's been a few months. But if I remember correctly, there were a couple times where Kanan was like, nope, we're letting Hera fly the ship. She's clearly a better pilot. And I think there was also a moment where Hera was like, you're never going to fly my ship, cowboy. And so I just kept thinking back to that every time Kanan was flying, because I just was like, I remember when you guys first met, and like Hera wouldn't even let you get near the ghost. Like, she didn't show him the ghost until the final scene because she didn't trust him enough. And now he's flying the ship, and the whole time Ezra's like, are we really flying? Are you flying the ship? We're going to die. And Kanan's like, shut up. We're not going to die. I'm flying the ship. So I just, this episode just kept giving me flashbacks to A New Dawn and like the cuteness of Kanan and Hera back then. So there's a lot of like little moments where I just kept thinking about that book. So are you ready for my big multi-point note? All right. This episode is a very historic moment in Star Wars. It is a huge historic moment. Let me list the reasons why it is super cool that Hera is flying a B-Wing. Number one, she is the first person to ever fly a B-Wing, and she is the reason that they even get B-Wings in the Rebellion. That's awesome.
She and Rex.
Yes, but she's the one that has to convince Corey. I'm sure if Rex and any other pilot, they wouldn't have got it. Number two. At the time in canon when this episode came out back in 2015, there weren't many female characters doing huge historic things like this. Now, we've had a lot since then, but at the time, 2015, this was a huge major fucking moment for female characters in Star Wars. It was most, because so far we mostly had Leia and Padme doing canon history changing things. Hera changed history of Star Wars canon in this episode because the B-Wings became very vital to the Rebellion. And it's because Hera was there, and it's awesome. It's a big historic moment in Star Wars, and it changes the course of the canon in this moment, because now they have those ships because of Hera, and it's awesome.
And they have droopy calamari, too.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, he can make them more ships.
Yeah, but it's because Hera got him to come with them, so.
Right, right.
And number three, the other cool reason why this is awesome. There were a lot of coding when it comes to Twilight people that when it's compared to our society. I often read the Twi'leks being as slaves or part of trafficking or quote-unquote dancers, and you can read dancers as prostitutes. So, like, they've always been portrayed as, like, a people that was always, like, beaten down and enslaved and, like, not doing anything cool. And we don't always get to focus on them being awesome fighters and doing awesome things in the movies. Now, the Filoniverse does a really good job showcasing Twi'leks. And they've really made sure to show those different sides of the Twi'lek people in Clone Wars and Rebels. And it's so cool that And like they have a really rich culture that we get to see in the Filoniverse. So it's so cool that there's like people that's usually beaten down in the movies and like shown as like slaves and prostitutes and like part of human trafficking and stuff like that. The first person ever to fly a B-Wing is a Twi'lek. And that's an amazing thing for like to show for the rest of characters. And it just shows like Filoni just taking the care and the time to like break them out of the stereotype from the movie to give them more of a culture and to flesh out their story and like to show that. And it's just a really cool moment that the first person ever to fly a B-Wing is a Twi'lek woman. And I just get really emotional thinking about that because it's just the entire sequence is just an amazing moment in Star Wars canon.
And that B-Wing looks really cool.
Yeah, the entire sequence is beautiful. I love how it flies and how it just turns.
It looks deadlier than the B-Wings that came after it. It looks more, tough and sort of custom made. It's neat looking.
Yeah, I wonder if in the long run, Hera got to keep that ship. If it was like, if Corey gave it to her as a present. Like, once they started making more and, like, tweaking it, like, that original one, like, if he gave that one to her, I wonder if that was a thing.
I know, we'll have to start looking in Rogue One to see if it's hanging out in there somewhere.
That's true. Because we know that the ghost is in Rogue One, but
we don't know if it's Hera driving it.
Hera's driving the ghost in Rogue One. We do know that. I think that's been confirmed. So, but yeah, that's just a huge historic moment in Star Wars, and I love everything about it, so. But that's all I have for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
No, ma'am.
All right, Act 3.
You want to Act 3 this up?
Yes, I do. Here we go. So our heroes get a call from Kanan, and Hera takes the call going, "Honey, I love this ship. It's wonderful. This is my future anniversary present, okay? You're going to get this ship for me. I love everything about it, and it shoots the pew-pew thingies, and it's fast, and I love it. And Kanan, you need to buy me the ship. I need it now. Please, I love you." And Kanan tells her, stops her, and he's like, "Hera, take a breath. I need to tell you something very important." And Kanan tells her that they're starting the second attack on the blockade. Hera's too late, and they're going to have to go through with the attack without her. And Hera tells the others that they have to go. But the Blade Wing has a power drain problem that whenever the cannons are used, it drains from the hyperdrive. And Hera looks at Corey and goes, "Why didn't you tell us sooner?" And Corey's like, "Well, you didn't ask." And Zeb roughs up the Mon Calamari man. I was like, yes, this is Zeb's one use in the episode. Rough up the Mon Calamari. Go, Zeb. Shakes the fish man and throws him down. Well, Zeb roughs up the Mon Calamari man, and finally Corey admits that he added a hyperdrive to the Phantom. So you can bet, in any other circumstances, Hera probably would have been pissed that someone upgraded one of her ships without her knowledge, but this is a desperate time, and she is elated, and comes up with a balls-crazy plan for them. Meanwhile, the attack on the Imperial blockade starts. Kallus is targeting the Ghost, because it has the supplies, and the good guys are making a break for it. And Rex is there too? Rex is there too, guys. He's helping out Kanan and Ezra, and he's manning the gunners on the Ghost. And you go, old man. I love you, Rex. You're the best. This is the second time Kallus and Rex has faced off. This is great. And Kanan is doing his best. Gold Star, his best. He tried. He's trying. But the Ghost flying is not his forte. And they're taking a lot of fire from Kallus. And just as things look desperate, Hera flies in there with the Blade Wing, and the Phantom minivan is on top to help it drive them there. And Hera gets turned loose, and Zeb actually says, "Say hello to Kallus for me, and I ship these dumb boys so goddamn hard, and oh my god, I can't wait for their episode so Kallus and Zeb can be friends and love each other and get married in the finale. Fuck yeah, I'm loving it." But we're not there yet. We're talking about a space battle. I'm sorry. Here we go. I'm not sorry. I ship hard. Anyway, so with Sabine co-piloting the B-Wing, the ladies swoop in and they take one really good shot to take out one of the Imperial cruisers. And even Kallus is really impressed and really stunned at the turn of events. With an opening, the Rebels fly by the blockade and head down to the planet. Kanan and Ezra makes the drop-off of supplies, and they all get the heck out of there to the safety of hyperspace. Back with the Rebel fleet, they bring Corey to meet Commander Sato. Sato says that Bail Organa knows of a secret spaceport where they can make more B-Wings under Corey's supervision, thus why we get more of them in future films. Hooray, Kanan! And then Sato turns to Hera, and going off a recommendation from Kanan, Sato promotes Hera as the new Phoenix leader. And everyone salutes Hera, and they salute the space mom, and I cried a lot because I'm really proud of my space mom. The end.
Captain Space Mom.
Is she Captain? I guess she is Captain Sidula. She was Captain of the Ghost, but now she's Captain of Phoenix.
Now she's officially ranked Captain.
Yeah, I know. Space Mom. Yay. She gets promoted. I'm so proud of her.
Another B-Wing question, though. How did the B-Wing go into hyperspace after shooting up the ships with its Death Star ray?
The Phantom was attached to the top of it.
It was attached to the Phantom. I didn't see it attached to it.
Because Hera actually has a line, "All right, let me go." And Zeb's
yeah, right. No, that's when she gets there. That's how she gets there.
I think the Phantom reattaches to it.
When they leave. Okay, I didn't see it do that, so I wasn't sure if they just, like, sloughed by that or not.
I mean, honestly, I have a fucking continuity note about the Phantom, so I wouldn't get too detailed.
But my only real note is this is something that Filoni does really good and that they've been doing really good in the Disney Star Wars lately is they're just really good with the space battles. This one's just a very simple space battle, but it's very clear how they're making their run like a spear point with everybody protecting the one ship, and a good Star Wars space battle is awesome where you're invested in it and you can see what's going on. It just, you can't go wrong with it. And this one just knocks it out. It's not very super involved, but it just works really well, and they're just so good at it.
Yeah.
And as a visual guy, I give it a big thumbs up.
Hmm.
But that's all I really had to say about the third part.
I'm going to get my nitpick notes out of the way. So, this episode is very predictable. Like, it's a very run-of-the-mill Rebels episode, which is fine. But I like what really makes this such a big episode is its place in the bigger scheme of things. So knowledge of the future movies and like where the rest of the series goes like really helps this episode a lot, because like when it's just standing on its own, it's a very predictable episode. But now knowing the context of it in the bigger picture, it makes it better. So standalone though, it's a very straightforward episode. So there's nothing like really big that like it was like, yeah, that's fucking awesome. It's no like it's not breaking any ground. My next nitpick note is they dropped 4 crates onto the planet to save a planet full of starving people.
I guess it's all their food is like that super concentrate food like in The Force Awakens. You know, you just stir, you add a little water to it and it puffs up into a souffle.
And I'm wondering if it's also, like, they were feeding the rebels on the planet. Like, maybe not the rest of the planet, but, like, the rebels on the planet were cut off.
Well, they look like that when they were ejecting them, it looked like they could have been, like, the size of the back of a tractor-trailer truck. And then when they get down, there's, like, one guy just like, hey, they're like, half the size of, like, an army crate, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of super, maybe they just have like these tubes of super concentrate and all they need is one little squirt of food every day to survive.
Yeah.
Doesn't like I said, seem I'm like being that'd be so good for morale, but
these are my like super nitpicky notes. So. Yeah. And then the other one is actually for previous episodes. So I've mentioned it before all throughout season one up to now. In this episode, we see the Phantom get a hyperdrive, which is awesome because now it can travel and stuff like that. But in previous episodes, there would be times that the Phantom would just arrive on a planet or leave a planet on its own, and the Ghost is nowhere near it. It would just arrive and leave. So I'm just like, why? How could it do that before if it's getting hyperdrive now?
Unless they were traveling for like a week or something like that.
Yeah. And so, and that's just another super nitpicky note, because there has been a couple times I'm just like, how did the one that I actually like came to my mind is the one where Sabine and Hera were on the planet with the Fearnox and they were fighting like the little creatures.
Yep, that's exactly
and,
the one
like
I was thinking of.
Actually, no, the Ghost is there. It's the one where Grande goes there with Kanan and Ezra and the Fearnox attack Grande. The Ghost is nowhere to be found there because they're taking SIBO someplace else, and somehow Kanan and Ezra escape with a fucking Star Destroyer. Up in the atmosphere, and the Ghost is nowhere to be found. And I still remember that. I was like, how did they get? Okay, I can get them like off the planet, but how the fuck did they get past the Star Destroyer with no Ghost there? Like, so it's such a nitpicky thing of like them getting the hyperdrive now. So I kind of wish they've always had a hyperdrive on the Phantom, because it would answer like just some very like little nitpicky continuity things. Just because there's been a couple times I'm like, how did they get there? The Phantom doesn't have a hyperdrive. What the fuck? They made a big sequence when they dropped off Kanan and Ezra in that episode, but there's no explanation of how they left. So, yeah, I'm being super nitpicky, though. My next note is, I always wonder why they never made Rex Spector 7. And we know in the finale that another character is Spector 7, but I always thought Rex should be Spector 7 first. Rex should be Spector 7, guys.
Right. Write your space congressman. I don't know what to tell you, Hope.
I know, because, like, he's in the cockpit, and he fights with them, and he goes on missions with them, and he's always with them throughout the end of the series. He should be Spectre 7.
So you guys, if you just, at Lucasfilm, if you just made Hope a story consultant, you'd never run into these problems.
Fuck Jason Syndulla. He should be Spectre 8. Fuck Heron Kanan.
He'll always be Spectre 8 to me.
He'll always be Spectre 8 to me, because Rex should have been Spectre 7.
I'll call him Spectre 8 right to his face.
Spectre 8. Mm. Actually, that's probably what Rex is. He's like, hello, Spectre 8. I'm Spectre 7, Uncle Rex. No, you're not. Get out of here. let's go shoot shit. All right. That's exactly how that conversation goes. So a nice thing in this episode is we're starting to see Kanan come around on this Rebel thing. You know, he spent the first several episodes of season two not wanting to fight for the Rebellion, and he has been butting heads with Hera about chains of command and stuff like that. But we see in this episode that he's being more of a team player. He's working with them. With Hera's gone, he's taking over the Ghost to do this mission. And he even recommends Hera to be the new Phoenix leader, even though that would take away his time with the Ghost, or her time with the Ghost. And it's interesting because Kanan's starting to come around after the first several episodes, him really struggling here.
Well, if he didn't, he'd be being real grumpy because, you know, I mean, it just seems sort of like if you follow the Force, it's sort of going to put you in that direction, you know?
And you can see that it's still not like, you know, everybody gives Hera an official salute, and he just kind of flicks his fingers, and he's like, good job, Captain Hera. Like, he still has that little bit of, like, sass and attitude, but, like, we're seeing Kanan come around a little bit, and it's nice that he's growing. He's having character development, Chris.
Wow, whoa.
Huh?
How did that happen?
How did what happen?
Character development.
I don't know.
In a Filoni show? Come on.
Oh, God, yeah. Isn't this supposed to be one-offs and he was just magically going to be a part of them and not have any internal conflicts at all and everything was happy?
This is all the same characters having the same adventure week after week.
Yeah, but no changes at all. And every time, like, Kallus is like, you rebels, I'll get you next time, and twirls his mustache. No, he twirls his mutton chops.
In a way, that's what this episode is. And when we get to the end, that's sort of what that's our knowing the larger context gives us with the show. Yeah. A lot of that stuff, you know, looking to see how evil Kallus is at this point and stuff like that.
To see where he goes. So I actually really like that sequence when the B-ring shows up and like you see the look of his face of like, what the fuck is this? And then like it dawns on him. Like you see that look at it dawns on him that this is about to go terribly. And you see that shock in his face. Like that's actually really well animated to show like his shock.
It was totally predictable how that was gonna play out too. And they're like, we have to start the run. It's like, oh, she's gonna come at the last minute and just strafe these Star Destroyers, and that's exactly what happened. But that's a testament to like a good space battle is I didn't care. It was awesome. You know, I wanted it to play out that way. So, it was great.
Yeah, and I just love how they animated Kallus in that sequence of, like, he was just like, oh, it's an unidentified ship. It's not going to matter. And then it fucking matters. And you see that look in his face, that oh, shit moment that he has. And I love that moment of that his, oh, fuck, they're dead.
You should know by now. He should be getting wise by now.
Well, that's the thing with Kallus is that he's changing. He's keeping up with their tactics, but they keep coming up with new ones, and that's where he's a step behind. Because he matches them, but then they go a step further, and he has to catch up again. So it's a very nice kind of match of, like, they do something, he matches, they do something, he matches. And so, like we see that. We saw it in the Sandstorm when it was the Walkers versus the Walkers. Kallus is very tactically savvy in that. But again, he just can't go against Jedi because, well, he doesn't have the skills to go against
Jedi.
Yeah, and so I have to wonder how that Sandstorm battle would be different if, say, like, one of the Inquisitors were there, because then they would know exactly where Kanan and Ezra were. So, like you know, gold star to Kallus. He's doing his best.
Yeah, I mean, if there were Inquisitors there, they would have just been parkouring out the top of their walker and heading over to, you know, the other walker.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing about Kallus. Like, he's a very smart villain. He's not a stupid villain. He's not an Oresko or a Grint. He's a very, very smart villain. He's just up against Jedis, which is out of his league. So, like, and that's what I like about Kallus, is that he's not stupid. And he does his best against Jedi, but he just can't hold his own against Jedi very well. So, but no one really can.
You sound like me in the future talking about Thrawn.
Yeah. That's okay.
Don't talk bad about Thrawn.
I love my husband. Oh, I'll love him for you. I can't wait to get to that. I'm glad you like my Thrawn panel. I worked really hard on it. I did. I did, like, I took the initiative to suggest the panel, and then I wrote the outline with Megan, and we worked together on it, and then we did the panel, and then I sent it to you. I even bought money for a new recording system for that panel, so I'm glad you enjoyed it. No one else liked it but me.
Oh, my God.
That's not true. It's actually our most downloaded episode in the last month, so.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I'm glad somebody enjoyed it, because, yeah, anyway. I know my buddy Gabby enjoyed it. She lives down in Mexico, and she's my my fellow Thrawn connoisseur. And she writes a wonderful, wonderful story called Last Known Trajectory that she's about to write the last chapter for. And she does all the artwork for it herself. And Gabby is wonderful. And it's the story of what happens to Thrawn and Ezra after the series finale. And it's great. Go read Last Known Trajectory because it's awesome. And she's about to end it. Anyway, my last point. If I remember correctly, and I think we actually posed this question during the Clone Wars because I feel like I brought it up at some point. But I wonder if I have this debate again. Because now, since we last brought it up, this question up in the Clone Wars, we've had more movies, we've had more content come out, and etc. since then. So I'm going to repose this question to you. Who's the better pilot, Hera or Han Solo?
It's hard to say because Hera is, in this contest, she has an advantage by having a weekly TV show. And you get to see her fly a lot because that's her primary, you know, position in the as her job. Mm-hmm. So we see her do a lot of amazing flying, whereas Han Solo, you know, it's more in Empire and Jedi, and that's about it, you know, a little bit in he pulls off quite a maneuver in Force Awakens, so there's that.
And in Solo. He does the Kessel Run.
Yeah. But that was... Yeah. But
that was Solo.
It's hard to say, you know? And Han Solo has more... There's different reputation. His reputation is among pirates and stuff, and hers is like a tactical thing. I don't know. I don't like to call it because it's really impossible to say, you know.
I remember when I first
you've seen Hera do more like tight flying through stuff than Han Solo.
And like, you know, I remember when I first posed the question, I gave Hera the hard win because at the time we just saw her fly more things. But since the last time I posted the question, they've been coming out with a lot of different content, like the books and the comics and stuff like that. And I know there's a comic series where he was a cadet and he was flying TIE fighters. And then in the Marvel Star Wars one, he's actually flies an X-Wing and we've seen him fly more stuff. And so, like, there's more content of Han flying more stuff, but I would still give a slight edge to Hera when it comes to tactics and how well she flies. I think she's slightly better.
She's a military pilot.
Yeah, and I don't think... Top to bottom. It used to be a very hard, like, yeah, Hera's better. She's flown more stuff. She even flew a fucking glider one time. But, you know, like, all the content that they've been releasing recently is they've been showing Han flying other things and showing his different skills to fly different things, not just the Falcon. So it really kind of narrowed that gap. But it's a much closer debate now. And I think it's interesting because I think, depending on the situation, I think Han could be the better pilot. And I think, depending on the situation, Hera could be the better pilot. And I don't think that there's one that's, like, the best anymore. It used to be a hard yes, it's Hera, but now I think they've really been putting out enough content for Han recently that they've closed that gap.
You could just say, oh, well, Hera's a better tactical pilot, whereas Han is a better improvisational pilot. And leave it at that.
There's a really great one, comic miniseries. It was the Han Solo miniseries, the first one that Disney Marvel released. And he's doing a race in every stop of this race, he's picking up rebel informants. But this race, he has to think on his feet because if he doesn't, you die. And so I think in a situation like that, like that's where like Han really shines. But when it comes to something like this episode with the beer wing, this is Hera's moment to shine. And so I don't think it's as an easy of a thing to call anymore. Like back when we did the Clone Wars, when I was like, yes, it's Hera. But I think it's a much closer debate now. And yep. I don't think there is a best pilot. I think they're both have their strengths now.
I don't feel comfortable answering it. Not enough information.
My comfortableness is I think they both have their situations where one is better than the other and vice versa. So, but that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
I do not. I'm ready to score it up.
All right, score it up, Chris.
I gave it a 7.5. This is pretty much, like, it's got some great stuff in it. It's a good episode, but this is your standard, you know, oh, save the starving rebels. Do this. Blah, blah, blah. Kallus twirls his mutton chops. Loses the end. You know. So 7.75. This is just a great example of just like a standard Rebels episode, you know. And we're not going to have a lot of those, I don't think, pretty soon.
Yeah.
We're in the tail end of those.
Yeah. And I kind of feel the same way. Like, to me, this is a historic episode of Rebels. It affects the bigger scope of the big canon. It's because of Hera and her skills. And her skills with the B-Wing. And it's because of this that we get B-Wings in the Rebellion. It's a really big episode historically. She really gets to shine in this one too. Vanessa Marshall does a great job with Hera in this episode. Hera is just really good from beginning to end. And we're also seeing Kanan coming around to the Rebellion too. So that's nice because like he's progressing as a character. But at the end of the day, I agree. Even though this is a big game-changing episode in the big scheme of things, at the end of the day, it's still just a normal episode of Rebels. There's a problem, they go to the thing, they beat Kallus, and then they fly off, and it's how happy at the end. So, like, if this could have been framed differently, where, like, I don't know, like, they could have, it's a very, still at the end of the day, a very standard episode of Rebels, even though it's big in the bigger scheme of things. So I also gave it a 7.75 out of 10, because I don't think it's an outstanding episode of Rebels, even though it's a big history moment, but it's just presented as a very normal episode of Rebels. So.
Yep.
Well, as always, we'd love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review us on iTunes, it helps people find the show. So if you've been listening for a long time and you haven't dropped us a review on iTunes, mosey over there and hit us up over there. We would love to read it on the show, and if you like us, it'll help people find the show. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode covering Celebration 2019, and we got a comment from Brian Weber, and this was in response to the Rise of Skywalker trailer and our discussion of that.
I wish I could do an Obi-Wan voice, because I do Obi-Wan voice for Brian Weber's voice.
Oh, Brian has such a good Obi-Wan voice.
That's exactly why I won't do it. So just everybody imagine that this is being done in a good Obi-Wan voice like Brian Weber would do it.
He showed me a picture one time of him riding his bike in his Obi-Wan cosplay, and he just looked so hipster Obi-Wan. He had his little sunglasses on. He was riding his bike. It was great.
All right. So Brian Weber says, just a point on the supposed Death Star panel in the trailer. I really don't think that piece has to be on Endor or Yavin 4. If it's a piece that was blown up either the first or second Death Star, it could have been blown out of the planet's orbit to any planet in the system or further, depending on how fast they want to say the explosion caused its debris to go. Star Wars and physics don't really go hand in hand, that's for sure.
True that.
Or it's a piece that was meant for either Death Star 2 or some new Death Star space station thing that never made it. I'd imagine that something that large would have been mostly prepared in orbit, or it could have been shot down or abandoned until it crashed onto whatever planet it orbit, which would leave the story of how it ended up on wherever it is open for some other story to fill in the gaps, which is a classic Star Wars movie move. Yeah, it is. I don't know. You see, that's the thing is, if it's that complicated. I don't know. It seems like too much explanation for them to be like, oh, this is actually Mega Omega 7B, and this part of the Death Star flew that far or whatever. It seems too complicated story-wise for Star Wars to, not that it might not happen, but
yeah,
that would, you know, it seems to me that they would do it more simply, that's like the far edge of Endor where the forest turns to ocean or something like that.
For me, like, when it comes to, like, if it was, say, something that was going to be in, like, the books or the comics or something like that, or a TV show where they have a little bit more time to get that complex, then I think this would stand. But, like, with the movies, they only have, like, 2.5 hours. They have to keep everything, like, super simple or it's going to be convoluted.
Right, and they're going to have, I mean, you know, I mean, you also, these are Star Wars fan freak people who talk Hope and I do 3 times longer than the actual show of commentary on a Star Wars cartoon, people having the discussion here. But you have to sell that movie to the people who are like, isn't that the round thing from that first Star Wars movie? Mm-hmm. No, you know, so you have to like keep it simple for the rubes.
Yeah, like here's a good example of some place where they could get like super convoluted if they wanted to. They just, what is it called? What is the name? Vader Immortal. That's what I thought. Okay. You can do really convoluted stuff in like the lesser media, like the movies and the video, or not the movies, but like the TV shows, the comics, the books, and the video games. And here's a really good example of something that could possibly end up being super convoluted, but they brought back into canon. So they just released this video game called Vader Immortal Episode 1. And it's one of those Oculus games where you put on the visors and it's like you're in the middle of the game and stuff like that. And there's an Easter egg that they brought into canon, which is from Heir to the Empire. And with Heir to the Empire, the Emperor had a vault of weapons built into a mountain. And they brought that back into canon, including the vault of the Emperor's weapons. Well, it's something that we'll probably never see in the movies, but as a great little Easter egg, that's something they can sneak in there that they could possibly come back to and say, like, the next Vader Immortal video game, or in a book, they could bring it back and stuff like that. But something that, like, detailed and convoluted, that's not something I would say would come into the movies, because they only have 2.5 hours, and it's for a more broad and general audience.
And they got people's moms in there who are going to be like, wait, what? What is this? Why isn't it on the Ewok planet?
And it's a little bit easier to say, like, something Darth Maul and Solo, because even if people haven't seen the Clone Wars, they know who Darth Maul is from Episode 1. So they'll just be confused even if they haven't seen Clone Wars. But
yeah,
that's
it was still confusing
general
for them, but they're like, is he cut in half? But
yeah, but, like he was still a movie character and stuff like that. But something that, like, that it's going to go to this planet that's far away and stuff, I don't think that flies as much here. So, but we'll see. I'm not making any assumptions, because I was wrong about a lot of The Last Jedi, and I'm just not making any assumptions. Till
I'm not.
I'm just going to enjoy the trailers and be like, that's cool. And go from there. So, candy.
Candy time.
Candy time. What do you want to eat this week?
Any preferences? There's a
now
lot.
I'm going to give you a heads up. We're about halfway through our box, but we still have a lot of shit left. We have a lot of shit left, but sorry, I'm going to give you a very far heads up. What do you want to eat? I like the Kit Kat candy. There's a Snickers bar. Mars Brown. There's a Tropic with a dog. Did we already eat that? That's just the center of the dog. Well, if you don't know what we're doing, Chris is stupid and hates American Kit Kats. And so we then get candy from all over the world from our buddy Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It. And we review it here on the show. What's this Nestle Lion White?
I want to do the Chicky.
Chicky? What's a Chicky? What color is it?
Chicky. It's like brown and with orange lettering.
Brown with orange lettering. Oh, I see it. Okay. So the Chicky.
Chicky.
This week we are doing the Chicky from
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica? Oh, I see it. Yes. So we're doing the Chicky from Costa Rica. It has almost like very 70s like
packaging. It does.
It's very like funky.
that burnt orange color is very 70s color.
The burnt orange with the pink. Ooh, it smells good. Oh, they're like little cookies. Ooh, they look like little cookies.
Oh, they do smell good.
They're like little biscuits with chocolate on the bottom. Oh, they're good. They're little cookie biscuits with chocolate on the bottom. Mm. They're really delicious.
They're like an extra flavor. They're like sort of, it's got that, shortbread cookie thing going on, but it's almost like a shortbread cookie with a little bit of flavor of graham cracker.
Yeah, like a touch of graham cracker in the back.
Yeah, yeah, it with chocolate on the bottom. It's delicious.
Mmm, but it's not too sweet. It's not like super sweet chocolate. Mmm. Good job, Costa Rica. Those are delicious.
Mmm. Those are insane. Good.
And as always, thank you, Dario. We love you. You're the best.
Oh, they're melting your mouthers. They literally just like, bleh.
Yeah. I love shortbread cookies that when you bite into it, the shortbread just melts into like a butteriness. Oh, it's so good.
I love shortbread cookies.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris, as I shove more cookies in my mouth?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our website where we post up all our podcasts. We've been having a little burst in activity lately, I guess. I've had a couple people contact. We had one of our Batman versus Superman panels from a couple years ago is going through the roof. One of the old episodes of Trentus Magnus that I was on, all but back episodes are getting huge downloads for some reason. So awesome. You can also find us on Facebook, where we have the Two True Freaks page, where you will find Jay Guys and Jedi and all our other shows. And when we post up Jay Guys and Jedi's episodes, then you can ask Yoda some questions, because Yoda needs questions.
Please, please, please ask Yoda questions.
And there's the Two True Freaks Cantina, where you can just go and talk about whatever trailers are coming out or whatever book you just read or whatever the hell nerd stuff you want to talk about. And as always, there is one man who handles the Two True Freaks Twitter, because nobody else wants to deal with that cesspool of Twitter. Besides, no man has a constitution for it except for Gene, the Twitter machine.
Speaking of Twitter, I'm going to see if I can whistle it. Gene! I can't whistle. I also just ate like 4 cookies, so.
Yeah, right. 4 dry shortbread cookies aren't the best whistling prep ever that you're ever gonna get.
That was a little bit better.
But that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at Jay Guys and Jedi. I run our Twitter account, which I need to put down, so I'm just looking at it on my phone. And you can also find me at Hope Mullinax on Twitter. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com. Hopefully now with all my car stuff done, I can actually get to my summer project that I wanted to do, was to do a rewatch of Resistance. Let's see if I can actually finish that before it comes back in the fall. I also write a fan fiction called, what is the name of my thing? Forces of Gravity. I write a thing called Forces of Gravity, and it's a Thrawn fan fiction. And now that all my crazy drama is done with my life, hopefully I'm going to finish that chapter. I also write one called The Lucky Leku. By the way, Chris, when you brought up The Lucky Leku last week in the Hondo episode, it actually made me smile a lot that when you were like, Hondo listens to The Lucky Leku, and I was like, Chris is saying my thing. It actually made me really happy, Chris, so thank you. And I also beta read a Valkyrie Strike, which I was talking about earlier in the episode as well. So
the
you
Lucky
find
Leku
all the-
are a real thing in my mind now, so you'll be hearing a lot more of The Lucky Leku.
Thank you.
I think about The Lucky Leku, so...
Yeah, actually, like, everything I'm doing is, like, so far canon compliant, like, with that story. My Thrawn story, my Thrawn romance story is not canon compliant, but my Lucky Leku is, I'm going to keep it as close to the canon as I can. So,
the Lucky Leku are living rent-free in my head.
Yeah, so I'm doing that. So you can buy all that on Archive of Our Own or AO3 for short, and my name under there is Chaos Lydia. Woo! What are we doing next week? Oh, I think next week is Blood Sisters, which is an episode, if I remember correctly, I didn't really like that much. But I think, like, now I'm going to like it a little bit better. Is next week Blood Sisters? Wings of the Masters. Yeah, I think next week is Blood Sisters, if I remember correctly.
Well, we'll find out next week.
If it's not, then I'm wrong. We'll see.
See, all right.
But, yeah, that's all I have. Anything else? We have a guest in a few weeks. Yay! Stay tuned for that.
It is Mystery Guest.
Mystery Guest. Actually, it's not a mystery because we announced last week, but whatever.
They don't remember nothing. They got the memory of a gnat.
They got life stuff going on. Yeah, life stuff. Anyway, I think I remember that, like, the first half of the season was like, yeah, it's fine. And the second half of the season, I was like, oh, fuck, this is all awesome. So, anyway, bye.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. Dumbass. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
And this is your Uncle Don saying good night.
Good night, little kids. Good night.
We're off?
Good. Well, that ought to hold the little bastards.